This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with headlines. Busy news day. Of course, Donte Johnson now goes on the injured reserve list for the Seattle Seahawks, so his chance to be a starting cornerback now done. He has a groin injury. And remember, yesterday they cut three guys, including Byron Maxwell from the injured reserve list. Austin Davis was cut. And so shaking up the roster. Akeem King comes up from the practice squad. It does look like, I think, Earl Thomas is going to be on the active roster. Ended up cutting another cornerback, and so there's an open spot that's going to be there. At least they notified a cornerback that he's going to be gone, and so it looks like Earl may play a lot or play a little bit, but at least he's going to be active. We'll see if that happens. 1 o'clock, of course, is the deadline on that. As far as the Mariners, they lose 4-0 to the New York Yankees. They're now 6.5 games behind the A's. James Paxton gave up 4 runs reasonably early in the game. No, only 3 hits. Great performance by Tanaka. And so 6.5 games back as the season starts really slipping away. Let's go to college football, get some scores right now, because we are able to now start saying, hey, we've got college football coming up. But Mississippi State leads Kansas State 10-3. These are second quarter scores. It's Vanderbilt 14, Nebraska nothing. Houston over Arizona 21-0. How about that? Arizona losing from the Pac-12. Michigan over Western Michigan 21-0. That's in the second quarter. It's Duke over Northwestern 14-7. USF over Georgia Tech 21-7. Wake Forest leads Towson 21-14. Eastern Michigan leads Purdue 7-6. Wisconsin just scored a touchdown. They lead New Mexico 10-7. Army over Liberty 14-0. And North Carolina State over Georgia Tech 10-7. Storm get their first victory in the WNBA championship game, and they really just were dominant all the way through. This looks like a good matchup, and one where now maybe the Storm can claim a championship. Those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421, easiest ESPN. Here's the words that I think is the happiest thing I could say in the last month. Joining us right now is Dave Grosby. David, welcome back.
John, it's a pleasure to be back, and it's great to hear your voice, buddy.
Oh, it's great to hear your voice. So kind of give us an update of how the surgery went, how you're feeling, and how's everything going?
Well, I mean, the surgery was so long ago, geez, July 30th. There was artery bypass surgery on my leg, and they had to put a vein in basically from the very tip top of my leg and connect it all the way to the bottom. So I got a big, long scar. Unfortunately, developed a hematoma in my thigh behind one of the areas. So instead of all the staples coming out after 2 weeks, they had to go back in, kind of clear out the fluid and restaple it up. So I was basically bedridden for about 5 weeks till last Tuesday. They took the last staples out, and it's been recovery ever since. So doing a little better, feeling a little stronger. I mean, didn't have to learn to walk again or anything like that, but just, you know, after being in bed basically for 5 weeks running, lost a lot of strength, so I'm just building that back up. And the good part was, lost a lot of weight, okay. 25 pounds. So definitely on the road to recovery. Glad to be back with you, and going to be back on the regular show on Monday.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's such great news. And you're feeling pretty strong?
I'd say about 75%. It's coming back. You know, so I when I got the green light to go ahead and walk, I tend to overdo it. So.
Yeah.
In my haste.
Well, you love
back,
walking. So you love walking downtown and all that.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a big part of the lifestyle. So it was green lighted to go ahead and walk as opposed to just shuffling around the house, and went around the block a few times. My leg got really swollen again, but it's under control, and definitely feeling stronger every day, to quote Chicago.
That's great. That's great to see. And, of course, it's going to have great to have you back, and congratulations. It maybe took a little longer.
Yeah, I missed it, man. It's surprising. You know, you don't, I'm not going to say you don't realize you don't have it until it's gone, but, and I'm quoting all these ridiculous 70s songs.
I know. But, you're almost like Chris Berman. You're doing a Chris Berman on us.
That's brutal. but I'm back. I'm back, baby.
Well, that's good. And unfortunately, the Mariners have not come back with you. They're now 6.5 out, got shut out by the Yankees.
No, when I went down, they were still up, and they were still over the A's, who were charging at them. And, you know, I was anticipating the return of Robinson Cano to help that lineup. And the opposite seemingly has happened. And here they are now needing a miracle. Although, it's in the offing. And here's what I mean by that. They've got three games left with last week of the season, three games left with the Oakland A's and four games left with the Texas Rangers, last four with the Rangers, who the A's crushed last night and were playing terribly. You need to be you're 6.5 back now, which is brutal, and you got to play the Yankees two more times, which is also brutal, and you have three left with Houston, which continuing the theme. But the bottom line is you got to get to within three or four games of Oakland by the time you play them. You got to somehow find a way to pick up three games in the next 3 weeks. If you do that, you can make the last week of the season interesting, but the odds of that happening are poor. It's got to be very disappointing for the Mariners. Sure, the A's got hot. There's no question that they got hot and they stayed hot. But the Mariners went cold. I mean, their pitching vulnerabilities hit them. And really, the disappointment on offense, led by a couple of guys, has really been the biggest setback for them. They just can't score runs. And last night was a great example of that. I mean, just a desultory performance. And, you know, James Paxton, a couple of bad pitches, but as the ace, he's got to be the guy to hold the fourth down, and he's been unable to do that. So it's been very, very disappointing. And from the Mariners' standpoint, I mean, they're only a game and a half ahead of Tampa now for that second wild card spot. The fact that they can slip below them is really, really brutal, and it changes everyone's perspective on this season. The thing about baseball, you got to wait till the year is over before you decide how the year has been. And you evaluated this season in July, you'd had a lot different opinion than you have right now.
Oh, not where do we stand on the Dare to Dream Express?
It's heading way too fast into a turn right now, John.
Yeah.
It's in tremendous danger of derailing. It's got to turn. The sign up of ahead says 30 miles per hour. It's go rattling along at about 55, 60. Unless they can hit the brakes fast, it's going to go off the tracks, derail, and that's going to be that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a pipe dream now. I mean, let's face it. They've played themselves basically out of it. Now, we've seen it happen before. Again, I caution you, it's baseball. And, you know, there are recent examples of teams blowing, you know, incredible leads in the last week of the season. But, you know, it just doesn't feel like it's going to happen. It just doesn't feel like the Mariners have the pieces to make it happen. I mean, like I said, the starting pitching staff, you know, Marco Gonzalez getting hurt. They had a few bad outings. Paxton getting hurt and hasn't been the ace they thought he would be. Felix Hernandez, who's starting again today and is 8-13 with a 5.55 ERA, has just not been there. I mean, Mike Leake is throwing innings, but you know, he's 9-9 or 8-9 with an ERA over 4. They just haven't had it, and their bullpen got worn out. They put in other pieces, and some of them have pitched well, some of them haven't. The moves they made in season, you know, Denard Span has been a good pickup, but Cameron Maben has basically been a nothing. Those moves didn't really help them the way some moves helped other teams. So, just very disappointing that it would work out this way when they were at 1.24 games over 500.
Yeah, and 11.5 over the A's. And you talk about the ultimate tease because it looked like they were going to run away with that last wild card spot, and now it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, they really look, if they had played 500 ball, which we were talking about, they would have been at a 94-95 win pace at that point when they're 24 over. That would have put them right in the middle of things right now. Even with the A's playing the way they're playing, the A's wouldn't have picked up 17.5 games on them if they'd been playing 500 baseball, which they haven't been. So as much as you tip your hat to the A's for getting hot, the Mariners bear a whole chunk of the blame themselves because they just stopped playing well. And look, John, you know, you're a man of numbers, and a lot of times numbers tell the story. A lot of times they don't. In this case, they did. The Mariners' run differential is a negative now.
Minus 51 is what it is.
Positive when they were 24. Yeah. Say again?
Minus 51.
Yeah, minus 51 now. Minus 51, and there's still over a dozen games over 500. I mean, when they were 24 over, it was like a plus 2 or something like that. It really was an indication that the team was really more of a 500 club than what their record showed. So it was an anomaly, and it didn't last all year, and it's got to impact how they're going to build their team for next year.
Yeah, I mean, and you wonder what kind of changes might be in the offing for them because of that. But, you know, that they still have to figure out. But right now it's just a
matter of getting... Well, you really got to wonder. I mean, the big guy you got to wonder about, I think, on their team is Kyle Seager. I mean,
yeah,
he's hitting about 180 the second half of the season. His average is down to the 215s. I mean, he's still got a little bit of power, and he's still a great fielder. But, I mean, it's tough to carry his bat and Mike Zunino's bat. Mike Zunino with a little bit of power as well is hitting 190 for the year. I mean, he's not fixed. He hasn't come back. To carry those kind of numbers is very difficult when you don't have, you know, and losing Robinson Cano is obviously an impact, but you can't use that as an excuse. They built up that big record without Cano. So, him coming back should have made the lineup better, but too many guys are in a funk right now. And look, I don't care what you say. A fight in the locker room is never a good thing unless you're the 70s A's. So it's not something that happens with everyone. It's not something that it's not a big deal. When you're losing, it is a big deal. And they're in a bad spot right now, and it's because of the losing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing. It's like, I mean, they should not in the Mariner clubhouse be fighting about Russell Wilson and their opinion on him. I'm just joking.
Yeah, how about that, man?
Yeah. What did you think of that article?
Well, I like Greg Bishop. I like him a lot, and I've read his stuff over the years, and I find him to be very credible, and I've heard whispers of that sort of stuff. So it doesn't really surprise me. It certainly makes the Mariners' decision, or the Seahawks' decision, to really overhaul their roster, although it made some sense anyways, as Greg pointed out in the article with age and everything, but it makes it a little more understandable. It's not an unheard of thing for a quarterback to be aloof, for a quarterback to not be particularly popular with his teammates, for a quarterback for him to be treated differently, and in most cases they are, but it does fly. I mean, I can see where it would cause problems with veterans who had been here as long as Russell Wilson had, because it flies in the face of what the philosophy is. If you really build your philosophy on a everyone compete now sort of kind of basis, and everyone's responsible, and you know, even the catchphrases, tell the truth Monday and things like that, and you hold one guy out, you make one guy not feel that way, it doesn't work if that's your philosophy. Now, if you're Jimmy Johnson, you have a different philosophy, you know, or guys who've said, you know, if you're a starter, you do get treated differently, then it's consistent with your philosophy. But Pete Carroll's philosophy has always been that everyone's the same, that it's all about competition, and everyone's responsible for their mistakes, and you know, you gotta play it that way. Treat one guy differently, I can see it causing a problem. So I thought it was an interesting article. I don't dismiss it. I think Greg Bishop's a good reporter. I don't think it's necessarily applicable anymore, because the guys who are particularly upset about it are gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think what it shows, and again, I think you notice that the articles came out about the Patriots and some of the issues that they have. I think, you know, the desire to win, and particularly with a bunch of alpha males like this team had in the locker room, you know, you can see they're worried about the window of opportunity and the window of chance and all that stuff. And so you can understand to a degree, you know, why there would be that. But again, it's like, if they think quarterbacks don't get treated differently, then they're kind of naive to the reality of the National Football League, because they do.
Well, they do, but I mean, again, you're dealing with a philosophy that really stresses that's not the case. It's one thing to be honest about it, and it's another thing to say that everyone is responsible and everyone is this and everyone's treated the same way, and then not to do it. And the difference between the Seahawks and the Patriots is the Patriots, you know, we talk about the Seahawks, and you're right, they saw a window of opportunity closing. I don't know if the Patriots, except for Tom Brady, ever feel that way, because they constantly turn their roster over. Mm-hmm. And they don't stay with guys long enough. There have been a few guys who have been there for a long haul besides Brady, like Gronkowski and a few others. But for the most part, they change up a tremendous amount of players every single year to work into that system. So that's the thing that Pete Carroll has not proven yet, and John Schneider has not proven yet, that they have done more than create a team based on a couple of drafts. And this year we'll tell that tale. We'll tell the first part of that tale, because obviously they're a completely different club than they were before. You talked about the injury, and you know, I don't know how good Johnson was going to be at cornerback this year anyway. He wasn't very good with San Francisco last year. You got a completely rebuilt secondary. You got a rookie starting at linebacker for KJ Wright. You've got a defensive line full of questions. You got an offensive line that is back but still has questions on it. I mean, is there a worse matchup for Jermaine Ifedi than Von Miller?
No.
I mean, could it have been written up any worse for a guy who you're trying to get his confidence back at right tackle to go against arguably one of the best pass rushers, one of the best defensive players in the game in the first game of the year?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the running back situation, we'll see if Chris Carson can stay healthy. We'll see if C.J. Prosize can stay healthy. You seem thin a wide receiver. You've got question marks at tight end, young players there. It's going to be, in my opinion, it's going to be a very challenging year for the Seahawks.
Yeah, I still think they can get to 8 or 9 wins, but the vibe, I think, with all the young guys that are going to be out there, a little scared. In fact, if I had to make a pick, I'd probably think they'd lose by a point.
Yeah, I don't like them in this game on the road. I don't like, you know, the Seahawks haven't done particularly well on the road in Pete Carroll openers anyway. I can see, look, as long as you've got an elite quarterback who's got a weapon or two like they do, you know, 8-9 wins is a possibility. I mean, you can't just dismiss it.
Right.
And, And I think a lot of people will use the example of the Saints and their recent dip, although they're back now big time. But, you know, when they had Drew Brees. They kept Drew Brees when they're going through their transition. They're a 7-9 club. I mean, they didn't and could have easily in any of those years won 9 games. That's the view that I have of the Seahawks this year is Russell Wilson certainly can make it possible for them to win some games that they shouldn't. And when you have an elite quarterback, you've always got a chance to win in this league because no matter what, as we saw in that dreadful Thursday night game, most NFL games come down in the last 5 minutes. And if you've got an elite quarterback, you can make things happen. So certainly 9 wins is a possibility, though I don't think it's likely.
Well, I still don't dismiss it because, I did the research, and again, I took it back to 2008, and there's 6 instances where a team with a top quarterback, did not, had a losing season. And it all came down to 2 things, running game and defense. And so if the defense gives up 27 points a game, like Atlanta's done, the Saints have done for the 3 years, they went 7-9, then right. you it's a challenge. So the question is, can this defense, with all the youth and all the change, hold teams to 23 points or less? If it can, then
it's
going to
be really tough.
It is.
It's going to be. Look at the secondary, John.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got Earl Thomas back, which is good news, but I mean, it's going to be really tough. I mean, I wasn't that big a fan of Byron Maxwell anyway, but he's gone. You're breaking in all new guys. You're used to a completely different circumstance where you had half the field shut down. That's not the case anymore. So we'll see what they can do defensively. I mean, look, you can talk about having elite players, and they still got a few elite players in that defense, and led by Bobby Wagner, obviously. But that doesn't mean anything in this league. You know, it's about how guys play together. Individual play. I mean, the Raiders have had Khalil Mack for years. They've had lousy defenses in a couple of those years. So, I mean, an elite player doesn't make a good defense. Players make a good defense, and we just don't know with the Seahawks. That's the point. I mean, anyone who can honestly say that they've got a good handle on this team is lying. They don't. They can't possibly. There are too many question marks. So, you know, who knows? Maybe some of these guys will work out much more than we thought they would. It's just the unknown, I think, is the thing about the Seahawks, and it's the first time it's been this way for a couple of years.
Well, I mean, you really basically go back to 2010 and 2011 when the team was an unknown. That's where it is.
Except you got a quarterback.
Right. And that they
the
do
big
have.
Difference. You got a quarterback, and you... A great quarterback can steal you a game or two, and as long as they can keep Russell Wilson upright, that's a possibility.
Mm-hmm. And I think Russell Wilson's set to have a great season.
And stealing a game or two is the difference. You steal 2 games, the difference between 7-9 and 9-7.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Because last year, I mean, you know, they basically, with the way they played, they were a 9-win team. But, and you go into the point differential and all that stuff, and I did, and so they were 9 wins. But, I mean, they had 3 games where Blair Walsh makes the kick. You end up getting the win, so you're a 9. It's almost like the Mariners when they started out so hot. I mean, they might have been able to win 12, even though for realistic points and points, point differential and bad offense in the first 3 quarters. I mean, they were a 9-win team. It could have won 12.
Right, and the flip side works too. I mean, they could have lost that first Rams game if the pass was a couple of inches closer. They could have certainly lost the game to Deshaun Watson and Houston, who had that fantastic day. So there's always that margin of 2-game error, always. And that can make or break a season in the NFL. And we'll see what happens with the Seahawks. But my opinion on paper, coming out of the chute, too many question marks.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. But the thing that I agree with most is the fact that it's great to have you back. What's your schedule for today?
Football, John. Mm-hmm. Football.
That's not a bad way to be.
No, it's not, especially the early part of the year. It's always exciting, and college game got off to a good start last week. I felt bad for the Huskies, who really played well against Auburn, but made some red zone mistakes that cost them the game. They got a long haul now of having to win out impressively to try and get back in that mix. But it's been a real good start to the college football season. And John, I appreciate you, and I miss doing this, and you made it very easy to make the comeback.
Well, it's great to have you come back, and we will talk to you on Monday.
Thanks, John.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get on the phones. It's the John Clayton Show, 710-ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710-ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Pete in Redmond. Hey, Pete.
Hey, Grouse took most of my material, John, but I'll throw a couple things at you anyway.
Sure, okay.
On a spur-of-the-moment thing last week, we bought tickets for the Storm game last night.
Yeah.
They're really good.
Oh, isn't that fun? That game Tuesday night was incredible.
Oh, but the just last night, they played basic, solid basketball.
Mm-hmm.
No showboating, not a lot of slam dunks. They just run around without the ball, and they're wonderful.
Yeah. No, it's great to see. And what's great is that, the Mystics seem to be an easier matchup to them than they just had in the Mercury.
Absolutely. A couple other quick comments. Number one, I hope Graz will take care of himself. Those of us who've kind of followed him over the years he's been in this area know he's had some medical challenges. We just hope he'll take care of himself so we can keep him around for a while.
He's lost 25 pounds. How about that state of the news?
I think that's great. Just a couple comments on the Seahawks. Number one, I know Earl Thomas is talking about revenge for lack of respect. Well, I hope he doesn't hold that totally towards the Seahawks because of contract, but he might want to talk about the Dallas Cowboys who only offered a second-round pick for him. Maybe he'll take it out.
Actually, from what I gather out of Dallas, that wasn't even true. They didn't even offer a second-round pick.
Well, maybe he won't respect them either, so we'll see. As to the Mariners, in watching the season, I think they started out, the expectations were mild. Some people thought they might be able to compete with Houston, but kind of doubted it. But when Cano went out, all of a sudden, this group, with the exception of third base and the top of the rotation, got some adrenaline, and these people, they're a good team, not a lot of superstars, but they got adrenaline and really made us proud for that two-month period. It's just a shame now. They've just kind of run out of gas.
Yeah.
Adrenaline only lasts for so long, and let's just hope that Cano will get himself really focused next year. Seager will get some help. And Felix will have to determine really what kind of a pitcher he is going forward.
Yeah.
What
a change.
Yeah. We'll see what happens, John. Appreciate you every weekend, my friend.
Hey, thank you so much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jet. Jet, how are you?
I'm well, John. How are you?
Good. Very good.
Hey, I just want to give a shout-out to Graz. It's nice to have the old bloviating uncle bringing a sense of stability and comfort and just solidarity back to with those deep stentorial tones.
Oh, yeah. That's great. It was, I mean, honestly, to say the sentence is like the best sentence I've been able to say in, I guess, since the end of July. To go to Dave Grosby.
Yeah.
It's great to have him back. He's
yeah,
been a great friend.
You kind of had your hands full this summer.
What's that?
So it's good to see that the fall is landing well for you both in the workplace and at home. So I'm happy.
Yeah.
So now,
by the way, did you catch the fact that I'm now writing a column for the Washington Post?
Yeah. Or an editorial for the New York Times.
Yeah. But no, I'm actually writing for the Washington Post right now.
Yeah. Well, let's get to business here, John. All right, Jets. How many wins this year? I'm saying six.
Six. I'll go with you. Five or six.
I mean, hell, they play the Bills twice.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two. They play the Dolphins twice. They got to pick up at least one. I have no idea what's coming out of Miami.
Right.
But I got to believe they can perhaps pick one game up. The only advantage that Miami has is they're playing him in the second game of the season.
Right.
And if they're playing Darnold, who's got three games in 10 days, that kid's head's going to be spinning.
Yes.
I'm just not really thrilled about that decision.
No. Still think the count would have been.
I'm kind of wondering, do you think the league may have put a little bit of pressure or impetus on the Jets?
No.
To start Darnold that first week for
ratings? Absolutely
sake?
Not.
No.
No. That's just, that league stays out of that stuff, as they should.
Right. Well, certainly. Certainly. But I was kind of wondering because, I don't know, I just don't think it's a wise decision.
Mm-hmm.
I can see putting him in, the fourth, fifth week. You'll get through that first, three-game stretch. Let the offensive line try to gel a little bit.
Right.
And then get acquainted with each other and get acquainted with the new blocking scheme. And in all fairness, let McNown be the practice dummy, basically, and then take the beating. And then once things get sorted out a little bit, then put Darnold in. But, I think, you got Patricia and then you got Greg Williams in those first three games. I mean, Darnold's head's going to be spinning.
Agreed.
Literally.
That's
just,
that's almost, it is too much.
Yeah.
I mean, I look at Buffalo. And I'm just baffled at how silly they have to be. I mean, they trade away A.J. McCarron. If anything happens to Nathan Peterman, they have to put Josh Allen out there. I just think that's wrong.
Why did they trade McCarron? Do you have any insight on that?
I don't know. Say $5 million. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, Peterman's not a starting quarterback.
No, I agree.
You know, and then so what else do you have? You got the kid, and you don't want to rush the kid.
Mm-hmm.
So McCarron was the only guy, really, that you could be putting out there. Weird move.
Agreed.
I don't get that one.
No, I didn't like that one bit. It's like, what are we really doing here? It's like,
yeah, yeah.
This can help one team that's not New England in that division. But boy, how it sets up for the Patriots? It's once again easy bait to get to the number one seed.
Well, there's five guaranteed wins. Mm-hmm. You know, they're gonna have their hands full with one of those six games.
Right.
You know, the Jets usually give them a tussle.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what they're going to do with a rookie quarterback this year. That remains to be seen. But, you know, they got five guaranteed wins. You know, maybe Miami might rise up. But, geez, with the Bills, I mean, they're going to be the worst team in the league, unquestionably.
Well, I have a vote on the AP, and I put Cleveland 30 and Buffalo 31.
Oh,
or, I'm sorry, 32.
Cleveland, you know, I don't think Cleveland is going to be, I'm not sure they're going to be a playoff team. But I think the Browns are going to be much improved.
Right.
Just having Tyrod Taylor. You know, that team wasn't that bad last year. For example, against the Jets, they should have won that game. They only lost by, what, 3 or 5 points, and they left 17 points on the field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because of two turnovers within the 5-yard line, and they went on a stupid fourth down instead of kicking a field goal. There's another three. You know, and it was like that all year.
Right.
The Browns were not all that bad last year. The problem was the playing quarterback. You put a veteran quarterback in that team, there's some talent there.
Yeah, and see, that's why I think the mistake started when they traded Tyrod Taylor. I'm trying to get his name right because he doesn't want to be called Tyrod anymore. But it's like, yeah, Tyrod Taylor gets traded. I saw it today. Now he said that when they talked about his benching, they lied to him last year. And so you can see there's a bitterness that he has, and understandably so. I thought he did good work for them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think he wore down as the year went on, as he has in a couple of past years, because, you know, it's an athletic style, and I think he just wears out. But I thought he played reasonably well for that team, and he was a big part of their playoff run.
Right.
I mean, you didn't have Tyrod Taylor. I don't think that team makes the playoffs last year.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So I don't know what that management's doing there. It's very strange to me.
Well, in fact, they have only 17 draft choices on their 53-man roster. 17.
Hmm.
In other words, that's not good.
No, I understand that. But you know, but the thing I'm thinking is, it's not for a lack of numbers. Now, for example, in the Tannenbaum years with the Jets, that would not be unheard of, because he's trading five picks for two.
Yeah. So, in fact, when did he go to the Bears?
You know, so
when did Tannenbaum emerge with the Chicago Bears?
I'm sorry.
Did Tannenbaum take over the Bears? Because Ryan Pace traded three draft choices to go and get Mitch Trubisky moving up one spot, and two first-round picks and a whole bunch of other kind of juggling picks and all that stuff to go ahead and get the trade to get them Khalil Mack.
It's a philosophy out of the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what I don't quite get, and this is why we talked about this previously, I'm glad the Jets didn't further mortgage their future for Khalil Mack. Because while they desperately need an outside pass rusher, and maybe they can address that in the offseason with the draft that's coming up that's loaded with defensive linemen. But as far as this year is concerned, I'm glad, because while I think Khalil Mack would definitely help the Jets, he's not, in and of himself, going to get him over the hump.
No.
So they need those additional three, you know, high draft picks that they would have had to give up to fill out that roster, and some would say to build an offensive line. You know, down the road. So they're not just one player away. That's what I don't quite understand about the Bears, is they're not really one. I mean, I think they're going to improve them.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
But they're not one player away.
Agreed.
You know, and but again, I guess the flip side is that, you know, they're not going to have to pay the quarterback for a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I can see, I understand that.
We got to get that memo down to Jerry Jones.
Yeah, yeah, well. Well, they're going to be paying the Piper, what, next, I think, isn't Prescott?
Another year or so, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, they're paying that big money to the offensive line. they're gonna have to make some choices next year. And I think they really left themselves short this year.
Oh, agreed.
You know, which is just odd because, well, anyway, it's always fun to laugh at the Cowboys, I think. But, yeah, I'm thinking 6 wins this year, John. Let me ask you this. If it is 6 wins, does Bowles keep his job?
Maybe, yeah, because, I mean, it depends on
how they play.
Yeah, how they play, because I think, you know, 6 wins with a young quarterback, and if it, let's put it this way, if the defense gives up 22 points a game or less, then he stays. If he gives up 25, he goes.
Yeah.
Simple.
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple. I think a lot of it's going to depend on how the offense progresses this year, and also if the defense does improve. Now, everybody knows that they're short of pass rush, so I think they're going to be susceptible to the passing game, but you know, whether they're going to be able to hold people to 21 or under, I don't know. But I think the big question mark is going to be that offense and how Darnold progresses. And I'm just worried he's going to be running for his life, and I see a separated shoulder in that future.
Yeah.
And that's what I really fear. And that's why I just don't understand why they're pushing it. I understand they want to get as much mileage out of him, get him as much experience as fast as possible. You know, so they can develop him as fast as possible, so they can improve as fast as possible. But, man, with that offensive line, they're taking a big risk, at least the first month of the season.
Agreed. No, it's going to be a little bit scary. Hey, Jet, thank you for the phone call.
Well, if anybody can screw it up, John, it's
the Jets certainly can, no doubt. Hey, thanks.
Right, take care.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jake in Kennewick. Hey, Jake.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Great. How are you?
Good, man. It is beautiful out here in Kennewick.
Oh, nice. It's a little cloudy here in Seattle.
Oh, dude, we're loving the sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, so I called because I wanted to tell you how crazy you are thinking that Seattle's not going to blow Denver out of the water.
Really? Okay, tell me about it.
All three phases, man. I don't see how the Seahawks don't have the edge. On defense, they're going to get a soft landing with the quarterback playing his first actual NFL game.
That's a valid
point. Brand new team.
Mm-hmm.
And no proven running backs.
Right.
And a shaky offensive line. I don't see any way that they don't just come out and terrorize him.
Right.
On offense, I see a great defensive line coming at him from Denver, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
They've got one great linebacker and one great corner and a bunch of average dudes out there on the rest of their defense.
Mm-hmm. But the thing that gives me a little bit of pause is how many young guys that this team's going to put out there. I mean, it's not out of the question if Rasheem Green starts at defensive end that they have three rookies starting on defense.
Yeah, but that doesn't really bother me, man. Like,
okay.
Not really at all. Not against what they're going to see with a quarterback learning a new system.
Mm-hmm.
And shaky offensive line and no running backs that have done anything in this league. I think that's a pretty soft landing, all things considered.
No, and then that's why it's going to be a very interesting game to see how it's going to go. There's some reservations I have because, you know, the margin of error roster-wise for this team is very thin right now until they start continuing to build it up. Because, I mean, you think of the fact you lose so many starters, and now you've got, two starters that are out of the game. Now, I do think that Earl Thomas is going to be there, and we'll see how long he plays, but I think that's going to be a big asset.
I couldn't agree more. And last part for special teams, Janikowski's no stranger to kicking in Denver. He's got
right.
a huge leg.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Dixon looks pretty special. I think those guys, if it's close at all.
By the way, can you imagine, because one of the things that we heard back in the draft is, remember, because they traded up with Denver to get Dixon, and they sat back supposedly in the room in Denver, maybe laughing a little bit about that. So you're trading up for a punter. Can you imagine Dixon in a mile-high condition like that?
Oh, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
It's going to be fantastic. Looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
If we have to punt, I mean, it might not have to at all. Have you seen our offense?
Offense is better. I mean, again, it's like I still say 9 wins.
I don't know, John. I think you might be short selling this team. I think they're going to come out and surprise everybody.
Well, we'll see. I mean, you know, don't get too rambunctious, but again, it's better than people outside this area think. Hey, Jake, thank you for the phone call.
Yeah, thanks for taking it, John.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Ron in Bremerton. Hey, Ron.
Hey, how you doing, John?
Good, how are you?
Hey, I just one quick question. I've been high on Brandon Marshall all my life, or all as long as he's been playing. I've just got a real sneaking feeling he's going to be the story of the Seahawks this year in his comeback. What do you think?
I think he's going to do well. I really do. Because what I like about him is, well, one, I know him real well, and two, I mean, you're looking at a guy that has Hall of Fame credentials. I don't know if he's going to make it, but he's got Hall of Fame credentials. And so you can see that he's big, he's physical, he knows what he's doing. And, you know, last year, I mean, again, where you look at 31 as being the year as a receiver, you start to make the downturn. If you're a Hall of Fame caliber guy, you can now go to 34, maybe 35, 36. I still think there's good football left in him. And I think it's only going to get better as the season goes on, because I'm guessing he may be 85%, you know, because he's still coming off the ankle. He had a little bit of a hamstring. He had the toe and all that stuff. But, you know, I look at him as, you know, 45, 55 catches somewhere in that neighborhood.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rick in Tacoma. Hey, Rick.
Good morning, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing very well here. I'm a long-suffering Bears fan. I have to say that it looks like they're finally making some moves that in a couple years might bring them back into the playoffs here.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very good offseason, and I know it was a very steep price to pay to get Khalil Mack, but he's the type of guy who's going to make everybody on their defense better here.
Yeah, and it is a very good defense. I mean, I think that's the one thing that you would have to agree on, because it was top 10 last year. Roquan Smith comes in at the inside linebacker. I mean, you look at the core group. I mean, you've got like five former first-round picks that are out there now. I mean, Akeem Hicks isn't a first-round pick, but he's a real good player. Eddie Goldman just got a contract extension for $10.5 million a year. I mean, you start to like what you see on the defense. The question I throw to you is, what about the offense?
I have still, after in the second year, have a lot of questions about Trubisky. I would have liked to have seen him take Watson instead last year, but that's water under the bridge. You know, he played so little in college, and they're throwing a very complicated offense to him. So I could see him having problems the whole first half of the season just trying to adapt to the offense, to be quite honest.
No, I think that is an issue. No, I agree with that, because it's one where I still don't know how good he is, and I don't know if we're going to be able to figure that out this year.
Oh, you think that it could go the whole year and he still could be up in the air?
Yeah, I think so.
That's discouraging here. Well, I'm picking him for about 7 wins this year on the optimistic side. You know, no playoffs or anything, but I think 7 might be within their reach, which is a little improvement.
Well, and see, now that kind of jives with what I'm thinking, because I thought before the trade, they were a 5-win team. I think Mac can make a 2-game difference, and that would put me at the same number as you.
At
7.
Well,
yeah.
Sounds good. Well, thank you for your time.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Clayton.
How's it going?
I missed you last week.
I know.
It was a real bummer not hearing you on the air.
I was on the air. Where were you?
Well, I didn't realize you had a short show.
Yeah, 90 minutes.
Cougars.
Yeah.
So be it. Well, Mr. Clayton, let's go back to 101 football.
Okay.
And see if you don't agree with a couple of things. First of all, defenses win championships.
Disagree.
Now,
that's not the case. Quarterbacks win championships.
Well, Mr. Clayton, I'm going to stay with the old principle that a solid defense can nullify a quarterback and win. If you can't score, Mr. Clayton, other than field goals, how are you winning anything?
Well, because, I mean, you might be able to hold a quarterback for 3.5 quarters, but if a good quarterback can come back and get you the win at the end, then all of a sudden you lose the game.
Well, okay, but like I said, how about you hold the quarterback for 4 quarters and he doesn't do anything?
Well, if you can do that, but can you do that? But you know, you notice that how many quarterbacks in the AFC have won Super Bowls over the last almost two decades? And the answer is four.
Oh, I couldn't even tell you. You're the
no. I can tell you right now. It's Tom Brady. It's Ben Roethlisberger. It's Joe Flacco, and it's Peyton Manning.
Okay.
That's it.
Anyway, defense. So, Mr. Clayton, the other thing is, at least in college football and maybe even high school, it's a common understanding that a team's improvement, the most a team gains in improving themselves is between the first and the second game. And then the rest of the time through the rest of the season, it's just about fine-tuning
here's an issue I have with that. Is that, and particularly now that I think a few more teams like Notre Dame and UW and that they're playing good first games, well, yeah, they improve the second game if you're playing an FCC school or you're playing, an easy one of your non-conference games. Yeah, so it's like, yeah, you can have the improvement, but how much of that is your opponent?
Well, I understand. I'm not so much talking about the opponent as I am the team itself and the players, and just sort of ironing out the kinks and their assignments and stuff. That's where I'm thinking at. This game today for the Irish, they are going to play all kinds of people with the idea of trying to get as much of the team into the game to get the skills and the experience, although limited, to carry them through later in the season. You can't just start 11 guys on defense and 11 guys on offense for the whole season. That's why you've got teams of 52, 53 players.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be able to bring everybody on board, and that improvement happens between that first and second game.
I don't totally.
But anyway,
that.
Mr. Clayton, you gonna watch the game today?
Notre Dame? No.
Watch the great defense the Irish have.
No. I mean, who are they playing?
Oh, they're playing the Ball State Cardinals in state rivalry.
Give me a break! I got database stuff to do. I can't watch that.
Well, okay, just for a minute, so you can see this great defense that's gonna win the championship for the Irish.
Who said they're gonna win the championship? I mean, Nick Saban isn't the coach.
Have faith. So a couple quick other things. Listen, I went on the Washington Post this morning, and I couldn't find you.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something that's starting? Are you just sort of announcing today? That
no, I was on. It was on Wednesday.
Have something written, and it was in the paper.
It was on the Washington Post.
Well, I couldn't find it. I went to the sports section. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find anything. I typed your name in, John Clayton, and there wasn't anything with regards to Washington Post. You did have, to your credit, 1,900-some-odd articles.
It was there.
But there was nothing
it was there Wednesday.
I found in a quick search.
It was there Wednesday.
That indicated Washington
what
Post.
What can I say? It was there Wednesday.
I'll look. Congratulations.
Okay. Thank
At
you.
At least we'll be hearing something honest on that paper.
Mm-hmm. Very flattered to be writing for the Washington Post every week. It's
I know. Good for you. Hey, I hope it pays well, Mr. Clayton.
The prestige itself. Hey, Irish, got to run. Thank you much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Coming up next, talk Denver Broncos. Jeff Legwald for ESPN.com. Coming up next, it's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.